to Recurring Nightmares, episode 75. I am Jeff, joined, as always, by Chris.
Hey.
We are doing another director showcase on this episode. We're doing a couple of Sam Raimi films. My favorite Sam Raimi films, it just so happens to be. We're doing his newest one, Send Help, as well as A Simple Plan from 1998.
Yep.
But you know, and we'll get into why I chose these, et cetera, et cetera, and what we think about them as the show goes on. But we always start the show talking about like what we've watched over the last month, and I'm gonna kick it to you, Chris. Have you seen anything over the last few weeks?
I have. I went to the movies twice to evidently massive bombs, box office disappointments, and I liked both quite a bit, actually. I saw Masters of the Universe, which is the new live action take on He-Man. Or I guess it was, I guess the cartoon was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, right? Or
I, like, when I was a kid, I was just called it He-Man, but I think He-Man, it might just be Masters of the Universe.
Okay.
Like
that makes more sense, but.
Or maybe they rebranded it now as just Masters of the Universe, but like, I kind of.
I just remember it's He-Man. Like, that's what you watch. He-Man. Yeah. Like, I mean, you're probably right. Like, it probably was called Masters of the Universe. So we just didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went and saw that. I really liked it. I think that for a movie that is based on a cartoon that was designed around Hasbro selling toys, it's a pretty good modern imagining of it. Like, it knows how stupid the idea of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe even is. Idris Elba is in it as, who the fuck does he play?
Man of War.
Yeah, Man at Arms.
Man at Arms.
And he's the dad of Teela, who is like He-Man's best friend. It's like the movie starts with them as kids and He-Man being trained, and or Adam, as he's known, Prince of Eternia. And Skeletor and Evil-Lyn, they attack the castle, and Adam is like pushed through a portal with the sword to Earth, and he grows up on Earth away from his parents, away from all of his like friends and heroes, and he grows up imagining like the people that he remembers. So like, he doesn't know who, and I don't even know if he has a real name, but Fisto or Ram Man, like these guys are like, that's not their name, but that's who he thinks of, because like Fisto fists people. Like Ram Man, he rams men.
Do they have the neck, like, man?
Yeah,
Mecha neck.
Like, yeah, and like he's, because he has a mechanical neck, so like that's why Adam has called him these things. So it's like really dumb, but also like, yeah, that's like, Fisto was a guy who punched really hard. He had a metal hand. Ram Man was like, he would headbutt people. So like, a kid would come up with these dumb names, and like, it's an ongoing joke throughout the film. Yeah, Adam's very unsure of himself. When he gets the sword, he becomes He-Man, like ripped abs, all that. It's very tongue in cheek. I think it's very funny. It's not the best looking film, but I don't think it like looks cheap either. Like,
they spent money on it. Yeah.
Yeah. It like, I don't think the CG is great, but it looks fine. I was not like, this is so distracting, and it looks like toys enacting on screen. So I was like, this is kind of fun. I know everybody hates Jared Leto, including me. Like, I think the guy kind of sucks as a human. And anytime he's attached to something, he is like box office poison. But his Skeletor is pretty good. The only complaint I would have about the film is like, you kind of want Skeletor's voice to be a little bit higher. Like you want it to be like, and it's not, it's like more of like a deeper take on it, but the lines they have for him are very funny. I think Allison Brie is Evelyn. She's very good. Battle Cat's in it. That's fun. Like, the cat is really stupid.
Does he transform too? Like, Cringer?
Yep. Yeah. It's Cringer, the normal. And he's like, it's fun, like very like meek and timid, like even though he's huge. But then like he gets the battle armor, and it's stupid and it's fun, and I had a good time with it. Dolph Lundgren makes an appearance early on, which is kind of fun for anybody that watched the terrible original movie. I thought it was a good time. I would watch it again. It's comparable to me to that Dungeons and Dragons movie with what was it, Chris Pine?
Which was pretty good. Like, yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
I think Dungeons and Dragons better movie, but this is up there, like same vibe, kind of. It knows what it is, and it's not trying to be anything more than that. And I'm not sure who this was made for.
I know.
I don't like, outside of us who have like a latent nostalgia for, you know, 80s cartoons and 80s shit, I'm not sure who this was for, because my kids had zero interest in going to see it.
Well, it hasn't been relevant since the mid 80s. Like,
no,
you know, there hasn't been any real like, actually that's not fair, because there was
Kevin,
a reboot.
Kevin Smith did that reboot, which people like, but that's the thing. Like, I think
I did watch Smith,
he made that for us. Like,
yeah, I did watch the first season of that, and I thought it was actually good.
Yeah.
But yeah, even then, I don't know that I hit. You know what I mean? Like, I was like saying to my coworker who went to see, I'm like, I just don't know who that was for. Like, I guess for us, I don't know.
Yeah,
like, I feel silly
weird
about it. Like,
yeah, it's weird to get a $200 million. Like live action Masters of the Universe movie made for like a very small contingent
like
of people.
Elder millennials and Gen X.
Yeah, it's very weird. And they did not show up for it, or maybe they did, but like that was the extent of the people that were going to show up for it. So
I didn't show up, but it has been a curiosity for me since this came out. And actually, I almost did go to see it, but I just didn't because it was too long. And I was like, I'll
rent it. It is a little long. Like, I think they could have shaved a little bit of time off of it. The other bomb I went to is one that's currently still in theaters, which is funny because I don't think Masters of the Universe was that long ago. But it's not as recent as Supergirl, the new Craig Gillespie film, which is the second DC... new DCU contained universe film. Millie Alcock as Kara, or Supergirl. Another one, I really like this. Like, I don't know, I had a good time with it. I think Millie Alcock's really good as Supergirl.
She was awesome at the end of Superman.
Yeah. And it's like, that's kind of her vibe here, is like, she's just, and they get into it, why she is that way in Superman, and like, why she's kind of doing this. She just goes places where the sun is red, so she can get drunk, like basically live like a normal person, because her whole fucking planet was blown up. And unlike Clark, who was sent away as a baby, she was there. She was a teenager when her planet died, and her parents.
And they go into all this in the movie.
Yeah, like it did give some flashbacks. They actually show like the destruction of Krypton. That's where Crypto is. That's where she finds Crypto, is during the destruction of Krypton. It goes into all that, and like she doesn't feel like she has a home because her family, her planet's been destroyed, and like Clark, who is older than her in reality, like because he's lived longer, because she was in cryosleep for like 20 years or something like that while she traveled from Krypton to Earth. So when she crash lands, Clark is like already established as Superman, and she's just like a teenager, and she's still kind of getting over that. And that's kind of what this is about, is her coming to grips with being a hero and wanting to be more. And I think it has like a cool message. Like you don't always have to be nice to be good. Like, so she's not like a nice person. She's kind of like a moody emo person, but like her mantra is like, that she should still be a good person, 'cause that's the one thing her parents instilled in her. And it's funny because in the new Superman movie, we find out that like Clark's parents sent him to Earth to like basically lord over the humans. And Kara's parents don't do that. Like, they don't want her to go and rule over humans or whoever, because she has these special powers. They want her to help people. So like just differing kind of approaches to the two super people. And I really liked it. I think Jason Momoa shows up as Lobo. He doesn't need to be in it, but man, anytime he's on screen, it's fun.
Like he nearly saved that last Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah, yes. That was a bad movie, and he was the only good thing about it. he was in a completely different movie there. but yeah, he seems to really enjoy playing Lobo here. Lobo is fun in this movie, and I thought it was a good time. I don't know what this says about what the fuck's his name?
James Gunn's
DC universe going forward.
I mean, we have Clayface coming, so it's not like the verdict. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I also think like weird choices for your second movie, right? Like, I mean, Superman makes sense. Huge DC character.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go with I like Supergirl as a guy. I like Supergirl more than Superman as a comic book character. So like, I was always going to go see this, but I don't know how many people give a shit about Supergirl. I don't know how many people give a shit about Clayface, right? Like,
I will tell you this. I give a shit about Clayface. The two-parter of Batman, the animated series that was about Clayface. Oh my God. My favorite. That's my favorite of the whole series.
It's going to be me and you and Earl going to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, you know, and it's weird because you look back at what Marvel did, and like their first big movie is like Iron Man, and he is like a B-tier hero, like at that time. And I think Gunn's trying to replicate that here, but I don't know that they're doing it. I think he might just be going
where he's interested. And I'll be honest, like, dude, at the end of Superman, I was like, I cannot wait to see Supergirl. Also, the trailers for Supergirl, I was very super good. Into it. I'm like, I love Crypto. I you know, oh, is her trying to save Crypto? I don't know if that's what it actually is, but that's what the trailer
says. Yes. Well, so that's what it's. So, I mean, the trailers show, like, there's this other girl, her family gets murdered, and the people that murder her family are the same people that poison Crypto. Mm-hmm. So, like, Kara goes on this quest to get the antidote, which these pirates have on them, for Crypto. But in the process of doing that, she like comes to grips with being a hero and doing good things. So yeah, like, it is a movie about her trying to save her dog, but also she like has the realization that she can do more because because she is powerful in certain instances, and she doesn't have to do everything to be selfish. I don't know. And I really like her in this role. I think she's really good.
Yeah. I loved her at the end of Superman. And I think she has like a cool, unique look and attitude. And like the fucking people online that are picking on her looks was like, dude, you would be so blessed to be with a girl that looks like that. Like, come on, dude.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here.
People trying to say she's like ugly. Like, she has a unique face, but she fucking sells it. Like, I don't know.
I don't think people know what ugly is. Like,
she doesn't look. She has a unique face, but like she's sexy. You know, she's got style. Yeah. And a character had like again, I was sold on the character in the 2 minutes that she shows up in the last movie, and wanted to see this. But what's funny is like you are literally the only person I saw that said it was good, and I had a movie I wanted to see more that weekend. And I was like, fuck it. And I never even saw that. Like, I just looked up now. You rated it on Letterboxd like 4 stars. I was like, damn, I didn't even see that. Like, you are literally the, like, every other person I follow on is 2 stars.
I don't know what they were expecting or wanted. Like, it worked for me. I do think the villain kind of sucks, but, like, I don't know. Comic book villains kind of suck. They just kind of do. Like not everybody can be the Joker or Two-Face or Lex Luthor. Like,
yeah, you're not always gonna get a Heath Ledger
performance. Right. Like most other villains are not good. So two more real quick. 4th of July just happened, so I watched Jaws and also the new Aaron Eckhart film from Rennie Harlan,
who
also did one of my other favorite shark movies.
I saw a review of this one. I was like, does he know that Rennie Harlan did this, like his boy Rennie Harlan?
I do, and like I like some Rennie Harlan stuff, like Cliffhanger. Like the dude has made,
in general, I like him.
He's made good shit. This is a bad movie. Like, it's very he also made all those Strangers movies, so like he hasn't made a good movie in quite some time. He made those three chapters of The Strangers that came out in the last 2 years or so. Deepwater is Aaron Eckhart as a pilot, and plane goes down in Deepwater in the ocean, and it's kind of about them trying to survive while there's these sharks in the water. The sharks are ridiculous. Like, they all seem like they're on speed. Like, I've never seen a film portray sharks as like these like superhuman. Like, even Deep Blue Sea, which they were super sharks, right? Like, they were way smarter sharks. They were way faster sharks. These sharks are moving at like light speed. I don't know. It's so fucking dumb. Everything about this is bad. Like, the shark attacks are stupid. The plane, I will say, the plane crash is terrifying. Like,
a lot of crash planes tonight on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a legitimately harrowing plane crash sequence. And like that is a deep fear that I have anyway. So.
Yeah, you know me.
But then once it gets into the water, where the real shit, 'cause like if you've survived, like now the real shit happens, and the shark stuff is just not good. It's very dumb. I did not enjoy this one at all.
I'm very surprised by this.
Give it a pass. I was surprised too. I was like, this is right up my alley. I'm thinking this is gonna be a good time.
I saw Rennie Harlan doing a new shark movie. I was like, Chris is gonna fucking
be in love. I am evidently in the minority on it. Like, I guess on Rotten Tomatoes, like most critics are positive on it. I don't think it's very good. I think it sinks. It's bad. One other one, real quick. I finally got around to watching Olivia Rodrigo's concert film on Netflix. And she's a really good performer. Like, she's very, very good. I'm not like a huge Olivia Rodrigo fan, but she has like a unique approach to pop music. And I thought this was I would go see her live, I think, and have a good time with it, because she knows how to put on a show. That one's on Netflix. It's a good concert film. More acts should make concert movies, because also pretty concerts much, yeah. are getting ridiculously fucking expensive. Yeah. I go to a lot of shows a year, and like I had to cut back because like it's brutal. Like, tickets are ridiculously expensive currently.
Tickets, and then the whole experience while you're there, you're just gouged the whole time. Like, for a beer, it's just like,
what yeah. the fuck? It's like we went, my wife and I went 2 weeks ago to like the outdoor like pavilion concert, like where they have like a lawn and all that. And
it's my fave.
Yeah, it's a good time, but like drinks and French fries were $65. Like, yeah. I got, like, my wife got like one of those, like, I don't know, like Smirnoff ice type things. I got a beer, and we got a medium sized bucket of French fries. $65.
Yeah,
it was $40 to park. Like, just then, parking and the food was.
And then there's the tip screen, was. And you yep. feel bad if you don't tip. It's just, yep. it's just.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, make more concert films. That's what I've been up to, Jeff. What have you been watching?
Not a ton. I won't overload us here with a ton, but I did see a couple movies in theaters. There's not a ton to say about them, but I'll start with so when Supergirl came out that same weekend, Jackass Best and Last came out. And I'm a pretty big fan of the series. And this, despite the fact that, like, everyone seemed to discover the week that it was coming out, they're like, it's a clip show? What the fuck? Like, I thought the trailer was pretty clear about what it was, like, every time I saw it, which is, it's a mix of old and new.
Right.
Like, you saw the trailer a million times in theaters, I'm sure, like.
Yeah, it's like, this looked like, we're going to show you, like, our best of. And also, we've done some new shit. That's the last shit we're gonna do because we're approaching 60.
And it did feel like the reviews like focused on that too much. That like, this is like a clip show, and I think that might have turned some people off from going to see it because it did not do super well at the box office. But the majority of the movie is new, and very, very funny. And it was the hardest I've laughed in theaters in years.
Nice.
And I had a blast with it. Some of the stuff that's quote unquote old is footage that they've never shown before. So, yeah, it's old, but you've never seen it. And it's not because, like, the stuff got left on the cutting room floor because it wasn't good enough. Like, some of it is like, MTV would not show this because it's fucking insane. Like, we cannot show people. Like, so the movie starts with the very first Jackass stunt, which nobody has ever seen, which is Johnny Knoxville as like a 20-year-old strapping a fucking bulletproof vest to his chest, picking up a .38, pointing it at his chest, and pulling the trigger.
Jesus.
And I was just like, the stupidity and the, like, like, bravery and foolishness to do that, I was just like, holy shit. And it just kind of makes, like, there's kind of a thing hanging over the whole movie, like, it's special that this even happened. It's like, he could have easily died right there, or whatever, like,
yep.
That could have been the end of it. And you get this in the trailer, too, like, they're all in their 50s now, and there's, like, certain sadness that creeps in as the movie goes on, that, like, this is kind of it, we're not doing this again. And over the years, over the sequels of these Jackass movies, there's like been a certain sweetness that has crept in where it's like these dudes all really love each other and they're having a blast making a movie together. And there's just something like special about that. So I'd say if you're a fan of Jackass, like totally check it out. If you're not a fan of Jackass, become a fan. It's good shit. Trying to think of like anything specific I'd want to point out that was new. That's the one thing I'll say is like none of the stuff they do is like as insane as some of the stuff they did in Jackass Forever, which was a few years ago. Like in Jackass Forever, they built a beard of bees on Steve-O's genitals. Like there's nothing quite that insane. I don't know. There's still a lot of trauma, and it's a lot of fun. It's just very funny and sweet, and again, kind of sad. And I think it's definitely worth checking out. Like, it kind of bums me out that people didn't show up for it. The other movie I saw in theaters, I probably have even less to say about, which is Scary Movie, the reboot / part 6. I don't think it's a reboot. I think it counts as a part 6 of Scary Movie. Because it's kind of a continuation of, like, some of the characters who have been there forever. What are your feelings on Scary Movie, Chris?
I think I like the first two. And that's all I remember.
Okay. Like, that's pretty much the same.
Yeah, I don't have any... Like, they came out at a time where we didn't really have like parody films, like at least like high quality ones, and Scary Movie 1 and 2 seemed up they there.
Hit. Yeah.
And then I think like diminishing returns from there. I don't even know how many there were. What is this? 6?
This is 6. This,
yeah.
I maybe saw Scary Movie 3. I'm like almost positive I've not seen Scary Movie 4. I know I haven't seen Part 5. And like this type of movie is not my number one jam. I think we went over this last year when Naked Gun came out. And this movie got like pretty bad reviews. And a lot of the humor is very tired. And like, sure. But here's the thing. It's like it's so many jokes a minute that it's just like some of them are going to hit for you.
Yeah.
And I was laughing a lot. Like, it's like it got criticized because it does some like trans humor. The trans humor is very mild and not mean.
Mm-hmm.
But then they'll do something like it has like good black humor, or it's like where it's like that girl was as white as Candace Owens and shit like that. Or like it had me chuckling. Like I forgot 99% of it. Like 20 minutes after I left the theater, but like in the theater, I was laughing, I was having fun, I got what I came for. I went in with like the same kind of like mindset of like when I went to go see Mortal Kombat, where it's just like, dude, you kind of know what you're going in for. As long as it like kind of nails that, it's fine. Like, I'm not expecting anything great, and I had a good time. Like, there's like no plot, by the way. It's just like. What is the plot? There's a killer.
They've always borderline been like just it's a reason to like do the jokes, right? Like it's just something to string it along.
But it's not like a strong recommend, but I would say if it hits Netflix, watch it. Like if you're a horror fan, you're gonna get all like the references and shit. If you like the old ones, I haven't seen any of these in fucking 20 years. But, it was not, like, unwatchable or anything. It goes by quick. Like, that's the reason I chose it, is because it was an hour shorter than Masters of the Universe. So I was like, whatever. You know, I'm in and out in 2 hours. Good. The movie itself was, like, I think exactly 90 minutes. I don't have much to say about it. Like, if you're going to be... I don't think most people would find anything offensive in this. If anything, maybe some of the jokes are stale, but it's like a hit ratio of 50-50, I would say. Like, where, like, the jokes are kind of funny, 50 of them are just kind of lame. But if you go in with the mindset of knowing what this is, it's fine.
I mean, the Wayans were involved in this one too.
Yeah, right? Yeah, they're back in it. Yeah, they were not for the last few. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, I told you about this one. I saw a documentary on Netflix called Maternal Instinct.
Uh-huh.
This made some waves when it came out about a month ago. And about a lady, I think she's in Texas. She's like, you know, she's like in her 20s. She meets this guy. She's like in love with him. He's like this rodeo, like, cowboy dude. Who, in my opinion, is not very good looking. Like, looks way better than him. So I don't know why, but for whatever reason, she was like obsessed with this man who she is above his league, and she was scared that he was going to like leave her. So she pretended to be pregnant for 10 months, mm-hmm. which, as you might know, as a parent, women are only pregnant for 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
She does this like elaborate ruse where she's like buying like fake, you know, bellies to look like she's pregnant and all this. And, well, eventually she has to produce a baby. And what she does, Chris, you know, I think we might have reviewed it on the show, maybe the French film Inside.
Yeah, we, I believe we watched it or. We talked about it on Movie Dudes. I don't know if we watched it here.
Anyways, if you're familiar, if you're familiar with the French
extreme horror.
Yeah. If you're familiar with the French film Inside, you kind of know that how this is going to end. And it's just like, I did not expect that to be how it ended. Well, it's interesting because like the movie starts with body cam footage of like a cop rolling up on a pulled over car and this lady's holding a baby and she's like, my baby's not breathing. I just had him while I was in the car. Like, we need help. We need an ambulance. And so like, you know, she produces a baby at some point. You just don't know how. And yeah, dude, like it's one of those, I think I told you about the one last year where like, I didn't think it was a great documentary, but the story is so crazy. So like there was one last year about a girl who was getting cyberbullied. Like her and her boyfriend are getting cyberbullied. I'm going to fuck your boyfriend. You're a piece of shit. You should kill yourself. And it turns out at the end of that documentary, the person who was cyberbullying her was her mom. And her mom goes,
shit.
Yes. And her mom goes to prison for it. And that story is just so wild that it didn't matter how good the documentary was made. Same thing here. I'd say this is like decent.
Story's fascinating enough.
Yeah, it's just insane. Like, how is this? Like, how did this lady believe she would pass off this baby as her own? It makes no sense.
Well, like I'm just like thinking, like, okay, so she kills her friend, steals the baby.
Yes.
But now she has to pass it off, and like you have a cop, like. My baby's not breathing. We need an ambulance. I just had it in the car. Well, like, he's going to report that. Wouldn't the doctors be like, you didn't just have this baby?
Yeah, and that's on camera in the film. Like, the doctors being like, yeah, she did not just have a baby. But beyond that, DNA. Also, the fact that your pregnant friend
is now dead or missing.
With a missing baby. Like, the fact, like, she was so deluded.
Crazy
into this fantasy life, and there's so many good documentaries about this now. Like, there's that one, The Crash, from a few like a month ago, like where it's like social media is like really rotting people's brains. Like, and that's not the focus of this, but it's like
right.
There is part of that, the outward appearance of like, hey, like posting like, hey, we're having a baby. You know what I mean? Like that whole like the validation. Part of life.
And now I have to like make good on it so I can continue to get that validation.
But like I just don't know how she thought on earth she would ever get away with it. Like there's just no She's crazy, dude. It's like absolutely crazy. And she's like a pretty good looking girl. Like, the whole thing is just nuts. There's things that the documentary leaves out too. They talk about how she has previous children and she doesn't have custody. I'm like, you might want to go into why not. Like, it seems important in this case. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, again, I know true crime isn't for everybody, but if you like true crime, that's a good one recently just because the story is so crazy. I will end with The Bear, which just came back with its final season.
Mm-hmm.
The Bear started off as a very popular show that everyone seemed to like. And over the course of season 3 and 4, seemed to lose people. I get that because I also agree that I thought seasons 3 and 4 were not very good. Were there moments of greatness? Were there great episodes? Yes. But the show started to get like really up its own ass. And it was like, we're creating fine art. When it kind of started kind of silly, like with some good drama.
Yeah, it was kind of like a comedic drama.
Yeah. And I would say that's what it is throughout. But like you did not keep up with it, right?
No.
You just watched season one, or?
I watched season one, yeah.
Okay.
That was it.
Season two was phenomenal. And then, like, season 3, 4, like, there's just so much meandering, and we're not going anywhere. And not as funny at all, like, super serious, and, like, we're making high art, but it was not entertaining. And this final season, season 5, I feel like was a big rebound. Season 5 takes place over the course of one day. So it's like every episode is like, first episode is like Sydney and Carmi showing up to like start prepping for the day. You know, and you know, episode 2 is the next hour. Episode 2 is the next hour. And we're leading up to this dinner service. And it's on what could be the last day. Like it's like a dying restaurant at this point. It's their last day. And I thought it just got its groove back, man. Like there's something funny in every episode. There's something that will make you tear up in every episode, and it has the frenetic pace back that was there in the first season, where like things get chaotic, and they're just trying to keep up, and you're watching these people fucking cook. And it has like, this is like totally new for this season. It has like a really awesome synth score, which they've kind of done a little bit before. Like there's a part in season 2 where they use the score from that movie Thief. That's like a heavy synth score by Tangerine Dream. Yep. This season, like the show usually uses like source songs, like Needle Drops, like song you might know, right? Like this season is all like, like this fucking like synth shit. It's fucking awesome. And ultimately, it just left me feeling like, you know, like it was like heartwarming to me at the end. And I you know, really end up loving all these characters. Richie, who starts the show as like the comic relief obnoxious guy, kind of became the heart of the show as it went on after season 2. And it feels like this season they almost realized he should have been the main character. If for anything, Richie was like a reason to watch this season or the whole series. Evan Moss Backrack is a phenomenal actor, and he like really inhabits his character. And he goes on a real journey. Like he's by the end of the show, he's not that guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was worth it just for that. I was like really, I really loved it. I was delighted by the final season of The Bear. I think that the show stuck around maybe longer than it should have, and you know, had some middling seasons, but I feel like it's worth the journey. It's just a show that makes you feel good about people, which is many shows. It's
rare, so.
So that's what I've been watching. We have some movies to talk about, Chris.
Yeah.
So I picked this month. I picked two Sam Raimi movies, which is weird for me because I'm not a Sam Raimi fan. Sam Raimi is a very like silly and zany and flashy director, and it's just not usually for me. I don't want my horror to be silly and zany and crazy camera. Like, that's just not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
He has made some movies that I like, and these are two of them. And before we get into it, I guess I kind of want to ask you, like, how you feel about Raimi.
I don't love Sam Raimi, but... But I do, like, I enjoy, like, the Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2.
Okay.
Army of Darkness, that stuff. I did not love Drag Me to Hell.
And most people did. I felt like that was one of those ones where I went to go see, and I was like, I guess I don't see what other people are seeing in this.
He's fine. Like, he's not a guy I go out of my way to watch, but I don't. Like, I have no, like, I'm not like, I hate Sam Raimi, or, like, I need to watch everything he has. Like, if a trailer of his looks good, I'll go see it. If otherwise, he's not like I give him a pass just because he's Sam Raimi.
Okay. That's kind of, I guess, similar to how I am, except I think I like him less than you. Like, I don't care for Evil Dead or 1 or 2. And I'm, like, the rare horror fan. Does this not give a shit about Evil Dead 1 or 2?
And Army of, like, Darkness. Really, really don't like Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness is just like straight comedy. It's like, okay. Yeah. You know, but it's just like not what I'm looking for. So it's like, I don't have... This is not one of my directors. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Except he has made... The second movie we're going to talk about tonight is my second favorite movie of all time. Like, somehow... He has made one of my very favorite movies ever made. And he also made the first movie we're going to talk about, which came out this year. Send Help.
I'm going to be frank with you. You are smart. I know that you are great with numbers, but I just don't think you got it. As an executive, I see no value in you. Does that make sense?
I'm sorry, what?
You know we have the Bangkok merger coming up. Prove me wrong. Oh, Linda, before you go, I forgot to mention I've received a few complaints about you.
Complaints?
Noxious odors.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Take your seats, you're a little bitch.
Who's joined the land of the living?
How long?
You been out? Day and a half?
Have you tried making a distress signal?
Or a bigger fire?
I was busy trying to keep us alive.
But getting us out of here,
that should be your focus.
Not being Susie Homemaker over here.
What did you just say to me?
Let's not forget, I'm your boss. You work for me.
We're not in the office anymore, Bradley. No help is coming. We just have to accept that this is how things are now. You ever hunt? I think I like it. You are stuck with an asshole boss. Just like I was. Although I'm betting I am a much nicer boss than you ever would have been. Except for maybe this part. I don't think we should ever leave.
Which, if I could pull up my info about. So, it came out this year. obviously directed by him, written by Damian Shannon and Mark Swift. It released January 30th. It had a budget of $40 million. It made $94. It was a success.
Yep.
The premise of this movie is this long overlooked employee, corporate employee, which I thought was like accounting, but apparently she corrects him at some point. She's like, I'm development and strategy. Some corporate lady who's been looking for a big promotion. She gets
promised a big promotion.
Yeah. But the owner of the company dies and his nepo son gets put in, and this guy just does not like her. He's a giant prick, played by Dylan O'Brien. Dylan O'Brien, I first noticed him in a movie last year called Twinless, where he played two different roles, and one role was straight and one role was gay, and he was very good in it. And he's really great in this. Awesome prick boss in this. She's supposed to be like the mousy, like plain, like, you know, shy, socially awkward woman in this, which is funny because it's Rachel McAdams playing her, but yeah. she is good at it. Like, I don't know.
And they do make her awkward, and like they make her feel like she's the office weirdo. That like everybody knows she's competent, but like she's a fucking, like, she eats like smelly food and like she's disgusting.
Yeah.
They actually kind of make her gross, even though she's Rachel McAdams.
And I know. And like every review that I heard or read was like, oh, they tried to make her. I was like, I don't know. Like, they're like, you can't do that to Rachel McAdams. I'm like, I thought they did a good job. Like, her personality comes off as awkward, and they make her look awkward early on. But basically, she's a very talented employee who should get this promotion, but he doesn't like her. She like goes into his office early on, and what does he say? He says something like, he totally brushes her aside. He's like, you're not going to get the promotion. He's like, tells her she's not a people person. He needs someone who could command a room, and she's just good at crunching numbers. And he says, I love this line. And the second time I watch this, he needs someone who golfs. It's just like so funny. But he invites her on this bank, like this Bangkok trip that they're going to. I think he sort of presents it to her as like a consolation prize, but I think they actually know that they need her because she actually is one of the few people who has like expertise.
Yeah, well, and the guy that they put in the position that she has is like an idiot. Like he's just like
yeah, we need her. Yeah. And this is all set up to, like, the story of this movie is like, this employee gets, you know, stranded with her boss on an island. And, but what I appreciate is, like, I do think that, like, the movie spends, like, 20 minutes setting it up.
Yeah.
And I think it was worth it doing that because it really establishes these two characters, like, by the time the plane crash happens, you really hate this jerk, you know? Yep. And you kind of want to root for her. Then the plane crashes, and they're the only two survivors. They're on this island, and their reactions could not be more different. Well, for one, he's injured. He has, like, a leg injury, so he cannot really walk really well. But two, one of the things they set up in the first 20 minutes is she's a huge Survivor fan.
Yes.
So she's like psyched. Like,
because like she's finally like in her element. Like,
yes. She's living her best life, dude. Like, it's something like I noticed even more on the second time where I'm like, right away, she's just like, hell yeah, dude. This is what I wanted to do. Right. And it's so funny because, like, your sympathy is kind of with her, but I would say, like, your empathy or, like, your logic is kind of with him where you're like, dude, we got to do stuff to get off this fucking island. But he's not going to actually lift a finger to do anything. He just wants to boss her around, right?
Yep.
To get her to do stuff. And that's kind of what this movie is. Like, I think what makes this movie work is that there are two different reactions to being on the island. Like his is kind of super relatable, but he's a dick. And hers is kind of insane, but you kind of love her. And that kind of is an interesting, like, dynamic for a movie, I think.
Yeah, it works because, like, you want her to be the hero, but also you're like, everything he's saying makes sense. Like, I don't want to side with the billionaire dickhead, but I kind of would want to get off that island too. And she's just like, well, I can fish. I made a spear.
She's like, she's found her home. She's fucking happy.
Yeah.
And the other thing, like, another thing I really like about this movie. So, like, immediately as they crash and stuff and they wash up shore, she immediately starts, like, building a shelter. She's collecting rainwater. She's, like, sharpening shit. And, like, I am a huge sucker for this survival type shit. I love that show Alive, which is, like, a reality show where they dump people in the middle of nowhere and survive on your own. It's one reason why I love that movie, like, Castaway from way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I just love seeing someone like trying to use what the tools they have to live. So like, there's that element. There's like kind of the comedic like tension between them. And it's funny because he still tries to be like a dick to her, even though she's like taking care of him. And there's like points where she leaves him. There is a part where like, he decides he wants to leave the island and he like drugs her. He poisons her.
Well, because like, so she's been like telling him like about the things on the island and like, what, don't eat this, like drink that. Like, this is poison. This will slow your heart rate down. So like, he's like listening, but he's taking everything she's saying as like, all right, I need to get away from this bitch. Like, first moment I can, I'm gonna like trick her and set out to sea on my little raft.
Did you not find that weird though? Because like, it struck me as weird the first time, and it struck me as weird as the second time. I'm like, why did he need to drug her? Like, couldn't he just done it? She would have laughed at him and be like, good luck. Like,
yeah, I'm not sure either. It is a little weird.
Why do you need to like, if you're going to leave, like, if you're like, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home, you don't need to drug the person. Like, you just, yeah, like, and you'd be like, okay, bro, good luck. I'll come try to rescue you. Like, that was the one thing in the movie that sticks out to me where I'm like, I don't get it. Other than he feels smothered by her or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little off. It is a fun sequence, though.
Oh, especially like the tail end of it where she gets her like revenge on him about that. First off, she like, I think she rescues him. That's
very funny.
Yeah. She rescues him and she pukes all over him like a lot. Very Sam Raimi. But then she does like a hard candy scene where she like fucking feeds him some octopus that is poisonous and like it temporarily paralyzes him. And she pretends to cut his dick off, which is woo.
Yeah. And he had, and like she does that mostly because he had been taking advantage of her and also like flirting with her to the point where she was like, yeah, like, are always making me this romantic dinner. And instead it was like, I'm going to poison you. So her revenge is I'm going to tell you, I'm going to cut your dick off and you can't actually see it, but I'm going to make it look like I did.
Do you think she was attracted to him?
A little bit.
I think she did. I think she was. Yeah. Cause there's like an element of that at the end where they're like squaring off.
Yeah. I think it was, you know, I think it's, she is positioned as like this ugly person that nobody would want to be with.
She becomes more and more beautiful as she gets.
Like, yeah.
She has not bathed in fucking 30 days.
It's just like, as the movie progresses, she gets progressively hotter. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, I think, like, you know, somebody like that, who's the crazy cat lady, like, any sort of affection she gets from, like, a decent looking dude, like,
yeah,
probably. I mean, that's how I position this. Like, I don't know, maybe not, but
I skipped over one sequence that's important. There's a sequence where there's like a boar hunting scene with her.
Yeah,
this is very Raimi Unleashed, where we get tons of point of view shots of the boar chasing her around.
Yep,
she finally, you know, her and the boar fight, and boar is like, he's not just squirting blood at her, but like snots and stuff. Like, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
But it was a thrill for her. There's one thing I want to say about her, though, that, like, I think kind of makes, well, I think she kind of becomes the villain by the end, which is not a take I had the first time I watched it.
Oh, absolutely, she does.
You think so? You agree with me on this? Okay.
Yeah.
So there's his wife shows up, like, his wife has, like, on her own found this place, and she basically not only sends her wife and his fishermen to her death, she ensures it, because she pushes them off the cliff ultimately at the end. Because she doesn't want to leave. It's not even, I don't think, necessarily about him, maybe partly about him, but she just loves this life so much, she wasn't ready to give it up.
Yeah, and she's in power. Like, she's the one, she's the one that has the power, because she knows how to do everything here, and he has no power, and nobody else has power over her. But so there's that, where she kills those two people. But there's also, like, it's kind of revealed that there's a house on this island.
It's so good. It's such a good reveal.
And it's revealed at the end, though, that she's known about it. Yeah, she's known about it for a while.
She took a knife from there.
Yep. And so, like, yeah, like, she's in the wrong. Like, even if you still want to root for her, they all could have been off of this island way earlier.
Like, I gotta be honest, like, on my second, like, I did not feel this way at all the first time, because I just kind of was on her side. But the second time I watched this, I was like, no, she's kind of the villain, dude. Like, she's kind of psychotic. Like, she very early on knows that there's this mansion that could go, like, hole up in it and probably call somebody for help. And she was just like, nope, I'm just taking a knife out of there. And she tells him that side of the island is, like, that side of the island has poison berries and bramble, and, like, you don't want to go over there. Like, it's bad. So, like, and that's like the Raimi element of this that I like, is that she kind of wins at the end, even though she is the bad guy, and you still kind of root for her. It's kind of like like, spoilers, I think this movie is very fun. Like, it's totally worth watching. I don't know what else there is to really.
Ultimately, I think the ending, like, after she, like, gets off the island, is really neat, because it all takes place on a golf course. And it goes back to that scene where he was like, I need somebody who golfs, and she's now
I didn't even think of that,
entrepreneur, and she's on the golf course, like, basically like, well, I could have done that.
I'm too. That I did not even think of that, but what I did think was funny is it cuts from her killing him with a golf club to her. So at least in this big climax, like, he finds his wife, and he knows that she did it, and he chases her, and they end up in this house, and it's a big 20-minute climax with her fucking with him and back and forth, and, like, there's a part where he confesses his love to her, but it's fake, and she realizes that, and then she kills him. And then, yeah, at the end, she's now been rescued. She's, like, I think she has a book or something about her experience coming out. She's, like, rich and famous, golfing, and it's her driving off into the sunset. And that's Send Help, a movie that I, like, again, because I'm not a Raimi fan, I was like, I don't know, we'll see, we'll see. And when I watched it, I was just, like, cackling. Like, I thought it was so much fun. So I'll just go ahead first here. For me, it's like an 8 out of 10. Like, this will probably be on my top 10 of the year.
I'm surprised it's quite that high on yours, but...
It's fun, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and I'm right there with you. I think it's also an 8. It does have those, like, Raimi horror kind of tropes that his directorial, the way he directed
it. This is Raimi. This is Raimi. Like,
yeah, it's straight through, but it's not a straight horror film.
No.
And maybe that's why it works a little bit better for you, because it is a survival movie, ultimately, with a tinge of horror to it, as opposed to, like, horror, like, straight horror, which is what Evil Dead 2 are supposed to be, where, you know, his comedic aspects...
Yeah, I can see what you're
saying.
Don't
mesh as well.
I can see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, I really had a good time with it. It's one I would probably watch again. It's in a genre I do like this kind of, like, survival Lord of the Flies type thing.
Yeah. There's the other part where she finds a conch. I found a conch.
Yeah. It's good. It's good stuff. It's good film.
And now we're getting to one of my favorite films of all time. A Simple Plan.
Look at all them birds.
Those things are always waiting on something to die so they can eat it, right? What a weird job.
That's an airplane.
I wonder how long it's been here.
It's probably one of those drunk doctors. You know how they're always crashing their plane, you know?
Oh, my God, look at this.
Those are $100 bills.
I bet it's drug money.
You know, what if this guy's a dope dealer? We're just like Robin Hood.
It's a police matter now. What do you think we should do?
What if we didn't turn it in?
It's stealing.
It's the American Dream in a gym bag. He just wants to walk away from it.
You work for the American Dream. You don't steal it.
Then this is even better.
$4 million.
Look how square it is.
So somebody comes searching for the money, I'll burn it. Look, we gotta be agreed on this.
Would you have done the same thing? I mean, if you'd been there instead of me.
I wish somebody else had found that money.
Does it scare you?
Yeah, it scares me. What if he tells somebody?
Just stick to the story and we'll skate right through.
Man from the FBI is gonna be driving through. Seems they're looking for a lost plane.
I want my share.
Plan was to sit on the money till we decide that it's safe to keep it.
It's like there's two sides now.
We're all in this together, man.
You had to pick right now. Who would it be?
You, you're my brother.
From now on, we have to be thinking ahead all the time.
To someone who's been properly trained, there are many ways to detect a liar.
You're just a normal guy, a nice, sweet, normal guy.
They're gonna know!
No, they won't!
You think you can take us out there?
Can you tell us what this is all about?
Looking for a plane?
I'm taking the money back right now!
You gotta get out of there.
Everything okay?
He's gonna shoot all three of you as soon as he sees the plane.
Don't move!
We gotta make this look like it was an accident.
They're not gonna take me away, are they?
We're the ones who need that money!
He just wants it!
Put the gun down!
Take him!
Well, I'm trying to come up with a plan.
Don't turn your back!
No!
Think to your feel evil. I do.
Was directed by Sam Raimi, obviously. Screenplay by Scott B. Smith, based on his own novel. He's written two novels in his life. He wrote this and The Ruins. And The Ruins, I think we covered on this podcast as well.
Yeah, I like The Ruins.
Yeah, I like The Ruins. Like, the book and the movie. I like the book and the movie, like, a lot. Yeah. I like this even more. This released had a limited release in December of 1998. Budget of $17 million. It did like 16. It basically made its budget back. Was not a huge success. And you know what was interesting about this film? is, well, at least for me, was I was not aware of it at the time, but my one friend in high school, his mom, she knew I was a movie kid, and she had rented this movie from Blockbuster, and she was like, she's like, have you seen A Simple Plan? I was like, I don't even know what the fuck that is. And she's like, you gotta see it, it's so good, and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. And but then a little while later, I did rent it myself, and ever since then, it's been one of my favorite movies of all time. When I do my lists now, I put it at number two. I put it right behind Boogie Nights.
Nice.
Because here's the thing about this movie. Like, when Stephen King gets asked, like, what's a story he wish he wrote? His answer is Lord of the Flies. And for me, my answer would always be A Simple Plan. It combines, like, everything that I love about storytelling. Like, great characters, great histories to these characters, a crime element. I love plots that are driven by money. Because I feel like that's what drives the world. I love, and we've gone over this, and I think this is one of the main things I love about this, is I love stories where the evil is within us, where, like, you're capable of incredible evil. Like, I find that very compelling. Like, it's just everything I find compelling kind of put into one movie.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking, and it's exciting. And it's a very simple premise. It's not just a simple plan. These three guys find a crash plane in the woods near, you know, their house, and I think it's supposed to be in Minnesota in winter. And inside the plane, they find $4.4 million in cash. And they come up with a simple plan. We're going to sit on the cash. If anyone comes looking for it, we're going to burn it. Sounds doable, right?
Yep.
Things go horribly wrong, Chris.
Yeah, they do. Like, very quickly, too.
Yeah. I'll set up our three characters, and I'll probably refer to their character names because this movie is so ingrained in me at this point. We have Bill Paxton as Hank. He's the main character. We have Bridget Fonda as his wife, Sarah. We have Billy Bob Thornton as his brother, Jacob. And then we have Brent Briscoe as Jacob's friend, Lou. Now, sadly, out of these leads, only Bridget Fonda and Billy Bob Thornton are still alive. Brent Briscoe and Bill Paxton sadly died early. Here's the thing about this movie. Like, I could go on for hours about it, and I have before in the past. I just kind of want to touch on things I love about it.
Sure.
But the general idea here is, like, things spiral very quickly out of control for different reasons. Greed and stupidity and...
A lot of stupidity.
Yeah, a lot of stupidity and... You know, you find yourself in a bad situation, you solve something to get out of it, you get into something worse. In many ways, this is like a condensed version of The Shield, which is like another one of my favorite things. Like, it's like, we got all this money illegally, how do we hide it? But my favorite thing about the movie, Chris, is that they all feel like real characters with, like, histories. Like, we even right off the bat, when they're first going to find the money, there's a part where Lou tells he tells Hank, he's like, remember when you said insinuated at me, like, you know, like,
yeah,
like, you could have just said hit, but you gotta put on all these airs, and you just feel like there's this history between these two characters. Later on in the movie, there's a lot of business with Hank and Jacob's family, where, like, especially with their dad, where they're talking about, like, there's this wonderful dinner table scene where, you know, Jacob was like, hey, man, yeah. if our dad found this money, he would have done this, and he probably wouldn't have killed himself. And Hank is like, what are you talking about, dude? He died in a car crash. Like, he's like, dude, I know he was drunk, but he drove that road like a million times. You think he fucking lost his way all of a sudden? You know what I mean? Like, there's things in this, like, there's such a shared history between the characters that I think is just so potent. And like, the movie like really cashes in on like several times. Like, ah, man, like, I'm already gonna go into like some of my favorite scenes. Like, when Jacob and Hank are in the car and he's telling him that like he's never had a girlfriend, and he's like, what are you talking about? You had that girl in high school. And he's like, yeah, dude, she was paid to do that as a joke, but like, don't you think like, if now that I'm rich, like I could be happy and I could have a girl? Like, it's just heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. Like, and that's like so much about, I mean, there's many things about this movie I think that makes it like a masterpiece, but like that moment in a movie like this is just like, I don't know. It's so perfect. Yeah, it's gonna be hard for me to get through this one because I like, dude, you have no idea how much I love this movie. But yeah, it falls apart because like, what's his name? Fucking Lou starts. He needs the money. He owes people money. Like, he starts. He shows up in the middle of the night trying to get money. There is this wonderful dynamic that I think kind of like incelish people have like clinged on to, but I kind of agree with, which is that Hank's wife Sarah is evil. Like, and I'll let you cook. You want to say it? I feel like you're winding up to say something there.
I don't like her decisions. I don't know about evil, but yeah, like, she definitely gets like, because it's funny because when they find the money, he goes back to the house and like he proposes a hypothetical situation.
I'm mm-hmm. like, hey, so delicious, it's so good.
What would you do if you found $4 million or whatever? And she's like, well, you have to give it back. Like, it's not your money. And like, somebody's going to come looking for it. So like, it's bad money. Like, and he keeps driving it, 'cause like, that's not the answer he wants. So he keeps driving at her that like, yeah, but what about this? What about this? Like, adding on qualifiers to get her to go, yeah, all right, fine. And then like reveals it. And then as she knows that they're going to have like millions of dollars, then I think the human side of greed sets in and she starts. So I don't know about evil. I think she's human.
I think they're all human. I think they're all human. I don't think any of them are like,
none of them are bad people.
They're doing evil things.
Yeah. Because the, it's like that like absolute power corrupts, but like that money also corrupts, right? Like, they're like, hey, we can improve our lives exponentially, but right now it's a split of three. What if it was only a split of two? What if it was only a split of one? Like, what if nobody? And that's where I think Sarah, like, where people are like, she's evil, maybe, or coming at it, because she's viewing it as like, but what if we just kept it?
Well, she's the schemer. Because, like, first off, he throws the money on the table. She just starts, you can tell she's, like, getting off on it.
Yeah.
And then for a little while after that, she's like, still wrong. And then in the middle of the night, she's like, you got to go put some of the money back. Like, she starts scheming right away. Like, you got to make it look like, well, the money was there. And there's even a wonderful part near the end where he tells her, like, she's like, I'm just trying to come up with stuff to, like, save us. He's like, what, you mean, like, putting the money back where the farmer died? You mean, like, doing, like, recording our friend, you know, like, and then everyone, a bunch of people died? Like,
yeah, like, all of her schemes are terrible and have resulted in people dying.
Yeah, and so there's one scene I want to touch on that I think really like underlines the greatness of this movie, and that is when she convinces him to, because they have already killed somebody, because they stumbled, this like old farmer stumbled on them like putting some of the money back, and she wants to get Lou, the drunk friend, to confess to it. She comes up with a scheme where they go out, they go drinking, and they start making fun of how Hank would confess to it, and then he would record that on tape, even though it's not like super believable, like to hand into the cops. Like, why would you be recording this if it wasn't a setup? Blah blah blah. She's like, all that matters is that Lou will believe it, right? And they go do this. And in the scene, you could see Jacob's animosity toward his brother. Like, he is just, like, disgusted by what his brother is willing to do to get this money. And he uses that, his disgust with his brother, to betray his one friend. Like, yeah. he starts in on his brother, like, you see how this guy sips his whiskey? You see anyone sip his whiskey? Like, you know, a little dainty, like, little sip. And he keeps going on, and then he gets the ball rolling, and next thing you know, they get this drunk guy, Lou, to be recreating what he, Hank's confession to killing this guy. Then Hank pulls out the tape recorder, shows him the guy on tape, like, we got you, bro. And that's when the movie really starts to fall apart. Because fucking Lou loses his mind, and he goes and grabs his fucking shotgun. I think that Jacob shoots Lou with his rifle because he's pointing it at his brother.
Well, so Lou, that's the drunk, right? He's pointing it at Hank, and he takes a shot. Like, he shoots over, yeah, Hank. Over,
he's not fucking around. Like, he is actually like uncontained at the, like, unleashed at this point. Like.
And so Jacob, like, thinking he's going to kill Hank, like, and I think he would have, right? I think the next shot would have killed Hank.
Yeah.
He takes the first, well, the second shot and kills Lou, which then unravels even worse.
Yeah, it goes batshit bananas. And this is the one scene where, like, I could see Raimi creeping in, because the wife comes out, she grabs a pistol, and then Hank shoots her. And it's like,
his flying.
Yes, his Looney Tune sensibilities. Like, she goes flying across the fucking kitchen into the fucking window.
So stupid.
Yeah, like, but that's like kind of the only instance where Raimi really creeps into me. The rest of it is
pretty reserved.
Yeah, the rest of it is like very, like, yeah, it's pretty like straightforward, and it's him kind of doing an homage to his friends, who are the Coen brothers. The Coen brothers had just done Fargo, and he actually consulted with them on this because he wanted to know how to shoot in the snow. And it feels like Raimi doing the Coen brothers, but I gotta be like 100% honest. It's, in my opinion, better than any Coen brothers movie, except maybe Men. But I would take this over No Country. I would take this over Fargo. Like, this movie just like speaks to me on some level. Like the tragedy of these people who feel like really well written. Like, there's just something so perfect about it. A couple other things I want to touch on. They find out it wasn't. They find out it wasn't ransom money. Or at least they think so. They found out it was ransom money. There was a kidnapping. Yeah.
They thought it might be drug money.
Yeah.
At first, because it's small plane. Like.
Yeah, and I love it, like, Hank is like, well, now we gotta return it because it's stealing now, and she's like, it was always stealing, his wife. But there's a very important point in this part, because in the news article she was pulling from, it says that it was unmarked bills.
Yeah.
Well, then, you know, sometimes the reporters don't get all the facts because the cops want to keep them to themselves.
Or they feed the cops. The cops feed the reporters.
Yeah, yeah.
Particular information to push that outward, right? It's like,
yeah,
you know, we're going to give you information that only we know that will draw or cause the criminals to reveal themselves.
But one thing I love about the scene in the library with him or her was her saying it was always stealing. It's like the lengths that you will go to rationalize things to yourself.
I think it's really great. It's not stealing if we're taking it from drug dealers. Like, no, yeah. It was still stealing. It wasn't your money. Like, it's just, you're not stealing from bad people. You're stealing from other people.
Either way, it's okay.
Right.
After her baby is born, him and Jacob are talking in the hospital. And Hank says, it's like there's two sides now. And Jacob goes, why are you guys always talking about two sides? And so Hank is like, what do you mean? Like, is Lou talking about there's two sides? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many, like, little, like, things like that are so good. Another scene I love is after Lou dies, Jacob goes to his house and passes out in his house, and the cops bring him back to Hank.
Yeah.
And Hank's putting him in the bed, and you have like a close up on Jacob's face with like Hank kind of like blurred out in the background, and he's just like, Hank, do you ever feel evil? I do. Like, ah. There's so many good, like, the things with Jacob are so heartbreaking, because like Jacob is kind of like, so Billy Bob Thornton's character Jacob is presented as this kind of like he's not mentally incapacitated, but he's just like a little slow and socially awkward, right? Like, yeah. I don't know how you would describe him.
That's probably, I mean, like, You would say he's on the spectrum today, but at the time, yeah, just socially awkward.
He's
yeah.
kind of a townie.
Yeah, like, well, and like Lou is very much in that line as well. Mm-hmm. Where Hank is, I don't think he's portrayed as being better, but like you're like, Hank has it together. These two are fucking idiots. Like.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Hank and Jacob are brothers. So it's like, how does one end up being just like the town idiot and the other one like has it together and everybody likes him?
But one thing that's grown on me through like 8 million rewatches of this is that, like, yeah, Jacob is kind of an idiot, but he's also like way more perceptive than his brother. Like, he's the one who realized their dad killed themselves, and Hank does not realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things like that where it's like, yeah, Jacob is kind of an unsuccessful guy, but like he kind of could see the shit. Like, he kind of see the angle of things.
He knows what's going on.
And he also, out of all of them, is the one person who like has morals. Like, right away, so like the first guy they kill, it's this guy, that farmer, that rolls up on them putting the cash back. Jacob hits him over the head with a tire iron, and right away Jacob wants to turn himself in. Like, he's like, this is like, done. We're done.
I fucked it up. Let's just do it.
All that plays into the ending, which is just, again, like, so heartbreaking. So that is, the last like 20 minutes of this movie are gangbusters, in my opinion. Like, it's so good. Like, this FBI agent shows up looking for the plane, looking for the money. He wants Hank and Jacob to like show them where they heard this plane going down, because Jacob idiotically told them at the beginning of the movie where this plane was going down.
Just like immediately too. Oh, did he tell you about the plane?
And it was because fucking Lou thought it was a good idea, because who would say that if they were innocent? It's like, dude, are you fucking stupid? You want to place yourself at a time and place? Anyways, the FBI agent is played by a fucking Lumberg or whatever from Office Space. I forgot his name. But he's not FBI agent. He's one of the kidnappers. He wants the fucking money. I think Bridget Fonda, like Sarah, starts to realize it pretty quickly.
Yeah. She's like,
yeah.
That guy is probably not
an
FBI agent.
He's there at the fucking, police station, and she's calling him, and he's on the phone with them in the room, and she's like, you need to get out of there. You need to get out of there. Like, it's not him. He's fucking the guy. And it's just so good. It's just, like, the ending is so good. They go out before him. Fucking Hank is, like, grabbing whatever gun he could grab out of the gun case and whatever bullets he could grab. He's trying to put them together in the back of the car. She knows he's fucked. She calls Jacob to come save the day. They all go out into the woods, and shit goes absolutely fucking bad again. I think the fake FBI agent shoots the sheriff or the cop.
Yeah, because Hank's coming over the ridge. Like, he knows it's all going bad, and he's kind of like yelling out to him, like, which is something Sarah told him too. Is like, hey, make him show you a badge. Like,
yeah.
Make him prove he's an FBI agent.
I love him trying to get like the info out of the cop. He's like, you know how they look in the movies? Like, I just kind of want to see what it looks like. Yeah.
And yeah, and he's like yelling down, and like this Gary Cole, whatever, that's who the actor is. He knows what's up at this point. Like, shit, the gig's up. Like, got to kill these fuckers, which I was going to do anyway, probably, right? Like, he was not going to leave any of them alive.
No.
But he kills the sheriff immediately. And then wants Hank to kind of show him where the money is.
Yeah, he sends him into the plane. And, Hank is in the plane trying to still put the bullets in the gun. He does end up killing him. Then Jacob rolls up, and Jacob is like done with this at this point. Like, I just have to really touch on, like, I think Billy Bob's performance in this is so good, but it kind of like, and I think everyone else agrees with that. Like, even people who are like 3 stars on the movie think that he's really great in it, but like, I think everyone's so good. I think like Bill Paxton's so good, Bishop Fonda's so good. Like, I think it's nearly everyone in this movie is their best performance. But Billy Bob is done, and he's like, we have to turn ourselves in. This is over. This is done. And like, Hank is like, no, this is the last hurdle. Like, we get past this. Yeah, we're done. And I just, man, like, the stuff that like Jacob says, where he's like, I don't want to sit around for the rest of my life thinking about this shit. Like, I don't want to be here. Like, he's like, if you love me, you'll do it. If you don't do it, I'll fucking do it.
And then you'll be fucked. Like,
yeah. And so, like, he does kill his brother. Dude, it hit me bad the first time I saw it in, like, the year 2000 or whatever. It hits me bad now. And then you get this little, like, kind of, like, very mini epilogue where it's, like, obviously, like, Hank... You know, Bill Paxton's character got away with all this shit, but his like life is just like empty, and he's thinking about the horrible things that they did.
Well, and there's no reward, right? Like, he kills his brother.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to touch on the best thing.
Yeah,
and, like, my favorite thing.
And then it's revealed that, like, you know, the money was marked. Like, they recorded the serial numbers. If you spend that money, somebody's
gonna get caught. Like, you will get, like, Like, I think they said they got like 20% of the serial numbers. If you keep spending that money, it's going to get flagged somewhere. You're going to get caught. So, like, the last minute or two of this movie is him, like, throwing the money into the fireplace after he's lost everything. And his wife begging him not to, like,
we go to Columbia. We get, and he just like pushes her out of the way.
He's like, no, like, I mean, he's right. It's over. Like, it's over. It's over. Like, he's, it's done. One of the things I was texting you, Chris, like, one of the things I love about this movie is everything they did was for nothing, because from the beginning, that money was not theirs to keep. Like, like, there was no way that they could have kept that money without being caught. I think it's like a masterful stroke on top of like a masterful movie, and then like the ending, like he does this. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Say what you're gonna say about the ending. So
he does this like monologue about like, you know, there's days when I like pretend I'm a normal person, and like I pretend I didn't do the things I did, and we pretend we're like a happy couple with kid, like a kid. And he's like, but those days are few and far between. You know, and that's kind of just how it ends. And then, like, there's this final shot of their parents' farmhouse that Jacob fantasizes about, like, moving back to with, like, this broken... I'm going to cry. With this broken window. And that's the final shot of the movie. I think it's perfect.
And right before that, so, like, the way the movie starts is, like, Hank is doing this monologue about how he kind of, like, has the perfect life. And you get...
You didn't realize he had the perfect life.
Yeah, but like they're showing it, like he's happy, he has a job. Yeah. Like, they show Sarah; she's like a librarian or whatever. She works at a library, and they redo some of those same shots, like particularly.
Yeah, but now it's a sad note. Yeah,
because like Sarah's smiling in the first one, like where she's putting the books away, and then they do that same shot, and she just looks miserable. Like all of life has just come down on her. It's a really, really like riveting kind of callback to the opening.
Yeah. This movie is so moving to me that like it doesn't feel like Raimi. Like I except for that one scene. For me, like obviously, like you can tell, I'm like almost tearing up talking about it. Like this movie is a masterpiece to me. I've loved it ever since I first saw it. I've watched it a million times. I think that like it does that crime genre thing of like what are we gonna do with the money to the max, and but it does it with like the foundation is these characters who have real histories where like their dad was a drunk who, you know, he killed himself for the insurance money. Like there's so much of that stuff in it. Like even like when the baby is born, Jacob brings the teddy bear from when he was a kid. Like, there's so many things like that are so perfect that I'm just like, one, how has Scott Smith not written another novel? Like, this shit is so good. But two, I'm just like, man, this is just like my shit that, like, is perfected in a 2 hour. It's basically like I said, it's like The Shield in a 2 hour movie, and it's just perfect. I fucking love it. It's 10 out of 10 for me. Chris, go off.
I really liked it as well. I think, you know, all the performances are great. I think, you know, the winter setting is very fitting. It's like this bleak kind of weather throughout, like it's snowy, it's cold, and everything in the film is like bleak. And as you said, there's like nothing they do would have mattered, like nothing. Like
the one with the guy that might have doomed.
There's no winning here for any of them, and every decision they make, they just make it worse for themselves. It's like just. It's just a very kind of like sad, depressing film.
Damn,
it's wonderfully done. I don't know if I'm at 10 out of 10, but I'm going to give it 9 out of 10, which would would put a Simple Plan as our winner here.
No, let me ask you, is this your favorite Sam Raimi, or are you like Spider-Man or Evil Dead?
I don't know.
It's not a very Sam Raimi movie. That's the thing. It's
not, yeah. Like if you're like, I think that's it. Like, it doesn't feel like a Sam Raimi movie. So like, it's just a really good movie. I understand it is a Sam Raimi movie, but it's not like what I think of when I think of him. Like it's just not like he has a particular style, and it's very reserved here, to the benefit of the film. Like, I don't think that if he added more of his, like, you know, if they had done like a weird zoom in, like when they're on the snowmobile or something, like, it doesn't work. Right.
So yeah. I thank God for not that stuff. Also, I love that Danny Elfman's score is like so sad and perfect. Like, it's so good. It's like maybe one of my favorite Danny Elfman scores. But anyways, go ahead.
It's just a very, very good movie. I don't know if I'd put it as my favorite Sam Raimi movie. I'd have to think about that for a long time, I think, because he has very different movies, and this doesn't fit in with any of them. So,
well, like, the reason I asked that is like, most people that love Sam Raimi love him for him. And so like, they love Drag Me to Hell. They love Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2. And it's like, to me, it's like, I don't like him as a director, but he made one of my favorite movies of all time. It's so weird. Like, it's so weird to me where I'm like yeah, I don't really like this guy, but like, he came to bat for once for me, and it was perfect.
And what I will say, like, we said at the top here, like, not huge Sam Raimi fan. Like, I don't care one way or the other about him as a director. As much as I thought this movie was as great as it is, I don't think I would go back and rewatch it as you have and over again, just because, like, it is very depressing, man. Like, it is a very like sad, depressing movie. There's no joy here. It's a great story.
I love idiots trying to dig themselves out of a hole. Like, I will watch this probably another 10 times a month.
Like, I would have to be in a very particular mood, or somebody would have to be like, hey, like, what's a movie like this? And be like, all right, I got that. I got you covered. Like, we watch this one. But like, if you're like, hey, like, what are you going to watch? Like, you have to watch a Sam Raimi movie. I'm probably going to watch like Army of Darkness, or I'd probably watch Send Help.
Yes. And again, Send Help, I really, really loved. Like, it will be in my top 10 this year. So
I don't think I'd go back and watch the Spider-Man movies. Like, while I liked 1 and 2 at the time, I don't think I would go back. And I think they've been surpassed by other Spider-Man movies now.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, 9 out of 10 for me. Is an excellent movie.
Simple Plan wins. Chris, what are we doing on the next episode?
So it's summertime. And Jeff and I both this last weekend, it was a brutal, like, 4 days. Same for you, in Chicago. It's summertime, and summertime means summer camp. And we're not doing the obvious here. We're not doing Friday the 13th, but I picked one I have seen and one I've not seen that are camp related. First one, 1983's Sleepaway Camp, which a slasher takes place in a camp. Little Friday the 13th coded, original Friday the 13th coded, I'd say.
Yeah.
And the other one is a movie that I don't think it was received very well, but it's something I've had on my watch list for a while. They Them, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
So it's not one I've seen, but fits that camp vibe that I was looking for.
I like it.
I
haven't seen that movie either. It got mixed reviews.
Yeah, I was like looking at it, I was like, oh no, maybe I like because
no. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know, like these reviews are pretty brutal, but I was like, I'm gonna commit to it. It's something I've wanted to watch since it came out. Like, it's been on my watch list. I just haven't got around to it. Like, this is a good time to do it.
Exactly the same. It got mixed reviews, but at the same time, I was like, I don't know. I really like Kevin Bacon. Like, I really do. And Sleepaway Camp is just a blast.
Did you know there's fucking five of those movies?
I think I've only seen one. Maybe I've seen part two. Obviously, I remember seeing part one because of the ending.
That's the other thing with they them is like,
so there's a trans element to both.
Yeah. So I thought it's like that kind of ties in. Like, there's an LGBTQ, maybe not the best the best interpretation of it in either film, but we'll see.
If you're interested, Chris, I think that the first one was on Joe Bob, and they bring the original actress on to talk about it, and she actually it was like a running joke through the series that she was their mangled dick expert. Like, she was like the expert on dicks. So she would come back on throughout the series for other movies, but I think they did show the original Sleepaway Camp.
I know that they replaced the main character in two, like same character but different actress.
But the original actress, Felisa Rose, she was a big ally, whatever, of the Last Drive-In. Like, she was on there a bunch, and we'll get into it, but it's one of those slasher movies from the 80s that it makes an impression for one reason or another.
Yep. So Sleepaway Camp and they them.
It fits this, you know, summer vibe. Good choice, yeah. Chris. All right, so we'll be back next month with Sleepaway Camp and they them.
Yep.